that is a delivery device. In my old field of telephone, we face just the opposite process. We have a number that is very, very, it is so easy to use a number of us, and it is created major beyond interstate. First of all, we are authorized by the third voting house of the legislature to amend the constitution, place it on the ballot on people's ability. They are also to be called the constitutional convention by the process that allows for people who want to amend the constitution at such a convention. When there is, in 1911, we adopted one more amendment of the law of the constitution to address, and that's called the initiative process. There are not very many states that have the initiative process, and I would clearly encourage you to be very careful as you go about your endorsed evaluation of the appropriateness of the initiative process, and let me dwell on that. Second half of my formal remarks. The initiative process with California works as follows. About 8% of the people who voted last in the federal race, thinking it was a required for purposes of places of any nature on the ballot. Anything you wish can be placed on the ballot and placed in the Constitution. Therefore, our Constitution is a hard body of faith degree almost, if one would call it and describe it. And it is that kind of a document. Consequently, in some cases, there is no process by which there is any redetermination of the appropriateness of the constitutionality of the measure that is provided to vote and the signature requirement are both terribly low and without any specificity for massive geographical coverage of the entire state that it has become clearly in all cottage industry for paying signature gatherers and people who wanted to just very special interest kinds of things. This interesting study making all out of what the initiative and referendum process was first put in place in California. It was especially for the purpose of getting around the control of both houses of the legislature that allegedly was both houses of the legislature were allegedly under in terms of special interest. It was designed to give citizens an opportunity to access the process of government and lawmaking in a way that will avoid all the downsides of special interest. Suddenly, in this case, the initiative process follows the 1911 proceedings have become the tool by which special interest operates. Any person with a sufficient number of dollars to pay tickets from collectors and with a sufficient number of dollars to run issues that do so for their personal and primary purpose. Take one example. The insurance initiative of the early 90s here in this state, they were clearly precisely designed to help just the insurance industry. In most cases, are just the trial lawyers. In other cases, they did not have great payers, did not have frequent payment in mind in some of the very cases. Fortunately for us, the voters of this state defeated all but one. That one was actually a vote on the vote measure put on the ballot for the purpose of forcing a rollback. The quote that the initiative process does lend itself to the state and there's no authorization for it to be approved by the court to determine the constitutionality of things, even though it has been enacted by a vote of the people, it was ultimately determined to be unconstitutional. Clearly, that process stands on the floor if you actually have people casting votes on things that ultimately turn out to be unconstitutional. We have two other examples of that. The victims of the rights, which was in one of the early years. We passed that overwhelmingly in this state. And of course, the court stopped that as well. And we have one certain, even with the whole question of the trial, justice system and the process of how you prosecute these people. And the court threw that one out as well on the basis of it. That says that in the initiative process, there are clearly some serious flaws in California. Those flaws are rooted, in my opinion, primarily in the low threshold for people to be eligible to put something on the ballot. I have for a long time advocated against the initiative process altogether. I think it's countless advertise it for the rest of the nation, but the effect of our discussion is exactly the same as California. Our first year of what we have had is about the quality of issues. In 1938, two people, John and Ken, representatives of the Department of Homeowners Association, jumped on the opportunity as the alarming increase in the advanced valuation of residential properties in the state $400 a day that limits and took away about two-thirds of the funding for local government derivatives from the property taxes of the state. And follows that, there is a limitation on what government can spend, even though they raise money in excess of what it can spend. There is a triggering device requiring rebates to government gives out to citizens if that in fact happens. And then, of course, the teachers in the school systems of the state put a measure on the ballot to prevent their share of what is a limited fund that would be following the passage of Prop 13. And then, of course, the people who are interested primarily in teaching the figure in teaching put on the ballot Proposition 99 and had it passed and put it into the Constitution with an incredible burden process by which it could ever be amended. And that was to increase the figure taxes. And then they earmarked the spending of the figure taxes. Well, it was a combination of these things. But the horrible decision made of not allowing Proposition 13 to go into effect in 1978 as it should have, by choosing the state funds to bail out local government and hold local government versus often on the adverse impact of Proposition 13. We did so because we had a huge state surplus at that time. A combination of all those factors created an illusion in the state that you could live with all of those expensive things done by the initial process. Not until we faced the recession this year and the various lack of funds available for the general fund has been disbursement and for all the programs that we sponsor to the state, that it becomes clear to everybody that there is a serious problem. Not yet serious enough to convince the voters of the state to agree on a new Prop 13 to move away from the secure vote requirement of non-general obligation bonds and settlement at the local level, to move away from any of the types of restrictions imposed by all of the derivatives of the air of Prop 13. We've not yet at that point. So we are in the midst of a long process. We have a large growth in population, and we have that for the last decade. We have minimum flexibility of being able to respond to that growth through the halls of the legislature. We have the fear each time that there is an election of the process or an initiative specifically aimed at doing something for somebody's benefit that will further restrict the flexibility and the ability to be so responsive. And so California is literally in a nightmare, legislatively speaking, governmental management speaking, and much of it has been generated by virtue of the ease with which people can amend the state constitution through the initiative process. So if I have any advice from counsel to give it to me, I would say you ought to take the California experience. You ought to know that we try to stimulate the right constitution that has been a fairer image of that which is at the federal level. We did not succeed in doing that. That really should be your goal. And if, for whatever reason, you don't think you can ultimately achieve that, then you ought to be very careful about the issue process. One, you ought to have a requirement that there be 10 to 15% of the registered voters in the state and in your state who must be subjected to a suspicion, not just those few who voted in a group control election. Number two, you ought to require that a certain percentage has to come for each one of your 25 counties, rather than allowing San Francisco County and Los Angeles County and two other counties of our 58 to provide all constituents of such a measure of ballot. And the number three, you ought to literally have some threshold so that in fact, like the state of Massachusetts, there can be an attorney general or somebody designated to determine whether or not the attack is constitutional. Before there's even any consideration for voting by the people, so that in fact you don't create a disillusionment in the voting population that they voted for something that is now being overturned by virtue of someone having come. Now, particularly when the votes have been absolutely overwhelmed. Those things clearly must be contained, in my opinion, in any rational way in which to handle the initiative process. You should know that it is impossible, or at least if the state cannot set the amount of money they can spend on the initiative to be for or against the initiative. You cannot restrict it in any fashion the investment of funds or things to be collected. So all of the things to be collected can be deemed to be collected. And in addition to it, there is no way to block the process once you optimize it in terms of citizens using for their own private services and their own basement and services. So as you go about the delivery process, you really want to take what are the current telephone lines and literally design your system so that it's closer to where it is at the federal level rather than where it is at the state level. Finally, if you do the initiative process, you ought to provide a means under the legislature and in fact amend this whatever is put in place by the initiative process. We have a bar against the legislature. It is literally attempted to amend in any way that was placed in the Constitution by the initiative process. It can only be undone by a subsequent issue, which clearly makes it almost impossible for flexibility that may be needed to respond to the appropriate issue, the appropriate process. And this is the state. Those are my formal remarks for that report. And now, for the next 60 minutes, I would be happy to respond to any questions you may have, or give you the observations of anything that I may not have covered in my formal remarks and should.
Thank you very much, Speaker Brown. And the first person I'd like to call on for questions to you is Judge Stewart. Judge Stewart has been a long-time Alaskan who served on our original constitutional convention when the Alaska Constitution was first Judge Stewart, please.
Speaker Brown, thank you very much for your comment. If I can summarize what I think I heard, you recommend that we not use the initiative, that our Constitution should be like the federal Constitution, provide simply basic principles, and other matters be left to statutory law. Is that my...
That is correct. Let me just amend it slightly, because one thing I didn't reference, but that is the recall of the referendum. I do believe it is appropriate to have the opportunity for citizens to challenge the appropriateness of what the legislative or the representative body has done. So there clearly should be something devised. It should be burdensome, so that if they want to do a referendum on what the elected representative has done, they ought to be able to do that. But you also should have an opportunity to inspire elected officials sooner than they turn. And then finally, let me also say that all of these things should only occur in general elections where the massive number of people show up and not in special elections. Other than that, you're correctly judged, summarized, my view.
One other question that's addressed to your California situation. We have contemplated in this committee the possibility of a constitutional revision commission that might make recommendations to the legislature on the proposed constitutional amendment. Has your state looked at a constitutional revision commission?
We have, the last time we seriously and comprehensive fashion addressed our constitution, we did it exactly by the constitution revision process. The judge in this state who made a group from there on Warren County in the middle of '50s was the chair of our constitutional revision commission. That constitutional revision commission over a 24 to 36 month period put together what they considered to be the appropriate thing that needed to be revised the constitution, submitted it to the legislature, and over about a 24-month period, or at least one full term, the legislature debated and deliberated, modified, amended, and essentially adopted about 90 to 95% of the conditions work. We have now just created another constitutional revision commission in this session of the legislature, and it's for the express purpose of trying to undo some of the damage that's been done by the initiative. process. For I highly recommend this and commend to the Westminster a constitutional revision commission.
Thank you very much.
Representative Walter?
Thank you very much for joining us this morning. I really appreciate the things you're trying to do. I'm curious about your comment that it's not possible to limit the people collecting signatures that were doing so by money. Are you saying that you have a lawsuit when you were determined that that was violating your procedure?
Exactly.
Can you say a little bit about that, please?
We have asked, we are attempting in the fall of the legislature to limit campaign contributions, not only candidates, but all initiative measures and ballot measures, etc. The Supreme Court rule in our state that it's perfectly all right to live on a limited basis just candidate and to give up something for that, and but you cannot restrict issues or signature collection in any fashion. And they were most dramatic and most adamant on the free speech issue. And as a result of that, the only unit of state government not now subject to any spending limit, not now subject to any contribution limit, not now subject to any campaign limit, in any fashion, is the initiative of the referendum process.
Thank you, Brad. Representative
Hunt? Yes, thank you. Thank you. I very much appreciate you taking the time with your experience. That if you want to do a stream experience with freedom of democracy, I want to be people that believe what Patterson said years ago, that the best way for a state democracy is more democracy. And I'm very pleased that the reference to time in California 1911 did get the right to initiative. Of course, that would be referendum error on America, and I guess you think that doesn't keep us I have a little more experience there. I want to bring up the date for the 49th Constitution is that one of the things that I'm really, really upset with is that we have a pretty considerable, the most modern Constitution in the model. However, they sufficiently restricted absolute prohibition for the people having a voice, a direct voice in our Constitution, intending anything on it. We don't go through the legislature. We see the same question when the very first session has been brought up. Some of them, they can only address the bill introduced 29, 30, 40 times, same question. We can't get it through the legislature and the people really upset. But first, with an understanding that we already have the initiative process as far as changing statutes and referendum, our referendum is still absolutely restrictive. That is useless, absolutely ridiculous. But when it comes to the initiative on statute, we do require registered voters, only registered voters. We do require statewide percentage of voters signing that initiative process. We do require the Attorney General, the Department of Law, evaluation as to constitutionality. So not initiative and exhaustive under that part. Initiative or statute not changing the Constitution. We did allow legislative session to take place before the initiative is placed on the ballot. In case the legislature may want to have changed it as you expressed, and I think that the legislature with their experience and knowledge can address the situation as a public one, but in such a way that is more reasonable than something that you were brought out. So my major question is, number one, to begin with, do you think, or do you have a prohibition of the people having direct initiative to the Constitution, not the statute, with the caveat that you brought up, with the things that I just expressed that we allow, do you feel the people should not have the right to change their Constitution to recognize initiative like we do in Alaska? I believe that the federal constitution is the most appropriate model. And that model makes it very clear that the representatives of the people can initiate the process with the commission of the state in the fall in that effort to introduce amendments to the U.S. Constitution. The Constitution Convention also says that the representatives elected by the various states will hold membership of the conference made by the Supreme how to propose amendments to the Constitution. And then again, of course, that would have to be ratified ultimately by the appropriate number of states that are required by the Constitution. There is no direct access as people are to modify the Constitution. And I represent that label in the state level. Nowhere has there been any process that I know of where an issue or action was considered in the arena of open and public debate in a deliberative body where there is a minimum requirement that the representative, which is the material, listen to all the arguments and cast and inform an intelligent vote representative of their constituency. That's why it is designated as a representative of their constituency. And if it's you, they've been chosen as the party of the person most appropriate to provide that representation, and that's with your skill, and that's with your ability. In California, the initiative process has been just the opposite. There has not been any deliberative debate. And I'm almost certain there's not any other state where there's been a serious objective debate as you get in the halls of the legislature. There is not the same requirement from an ethical standpoint. And any representation pushed under the First Amendment debate in the initiative arena of the campaign on the floor of the legislature, literally pointing at other legislative bodies who rarely or require to at least be factual in your representation, and you would not usually held up to ridicule in an arena where ridicule costs you votes and costs you influence. That's not the case in the strength of campaign and the campaign process, and I would say the Constitution gives such a central document to the democracy, to this democracy, that it is a document that once adopted almost should be very, very difficult for it to complete the adoption of it. But once it is in fact adopted, at that stage of the game, it ought to be equally as difficult to amend.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Mr. Speaker, you referenced the federal constitution, and you know that the founders made it very clear that they wanted the state constitution to be the experience as the vehicle for people to develop as life develops, and as people experience freedom and liberty. They want the state constitution to be that vehicle of change, and they want that to be easier. Sure, the national constitution is for all the federal, and made it a little more difficult, but if we're talking more about two different areas, and I very much believe they said for the state constitution to be about 1 over 2 people.
Well, Miller?
I'm sorry,
thank you, Speaker Brown. I've just got a couple of information gathering questions. Has the 1990 Constitutional Revision Commission come up with any recommendations directly to the California problem?
Yeah, that's it.
What do you expect that?
We believe that by the start of the 1995 session of the legislature, they will continue to deliberate in 94. We figure by January 1995, there will be a report of the Constitutional
Commission. By 1994?
By 1995.
1995, yeah.
They will complete that work in 94. And we believe that in early 1995, we will begin the legislative process.
Okay, can you tell me what the best written references are which discuss California's problems and the solution?
The best written references would be access, constitutional issues, and deliberation. Their activities, their discussions, their hearings, the follow their open report, and criticism of informational sources. There are not valid proposed recommendations.
Well, there are information reports being filed now.
Yeah, they appear on a regular scheduled basis. Your website, they take Section 1 of the Constitution, and they will use Section 1 of the Constitution. There are people who come in and say, these are the problems, these are the things that want to be done. Generally, that kind of service will be available.
Who would we contact in order to get this information? Who would be the best person to discuss the title?
You could do it through my office. To the office of the speaker. And the person most appropriate in that office is the opponent, Michael Scalise.
time to go at them. And the alternative for the Office of Research, Joanne Murphy, the Deputy Director of the Office of Research. Pleasure to meet you, the Southern Office of Research. And she's kind of the compiler of the document.
Okay, thank you very much for your help. Are there any other information sources that I should be aware of?
Yes, both of them, yes.
Thank you very much.
Judge Stewart, do you have a final question?
No, I don't believe so. Just my great appreciation for the official comments.
Thank you. And Mr. Speaker, if you can take one more question. Our legislative research person is here. He's been working on research on the Constitution for many years. I'd like to give him the opportunity, Gordon Harrison. He had a question of you.
You stepped out for just a moment, Representative Phillips.
Okay. Well, Speaker Brown, I very, very much appreciate you taking the time today. Your comments are very worthwhile for us, and I am very grateful that you shared this time with us. Then into the administration in this last term. and you served on the constitutional convention. Your knowledge of the Constitution and the development of the state is comprehensive, and we welcome you to testify at this hearing.
Dale, I'm sorry, Lieutenant Governor Cogswell is not here yet. I will go up to his office to see if he's ready to come down.
All right, we'll get ready to go. They're ready. Okay, we'll go on then. We do have to know who's ready to go. And Lamorne, Representative Omar, will report on progress and recommendations of the legislative process and subcommittee.
Last constitutional amendment was adopted by the people of the budget.
fine. I think that some of the other representatives for them, the proposed resolution that will provide amendments to the rules of procedure to accomplish the scheme that Representative Homer has outlined to you. And I think that Sam Cook, the head of the affairs office on legislative research, he gives you, has done a good job, but that it does need some further detailed consideration. For example, I have a special concern about the final procedure for style and drafting. The only language in the proposed rule appears on page 2 of the proposed resolution at line 17, quote, the committee shall consider each resolution proposing amendments to the state constitution, giving particular attention to matters of style and drafting. It's very helpful, I think, to have that focus, that I would hope that the language could be worked over a little bit more to further emphasize that concern, given the experience of the convention in 55 and the importance of the work of that nature for the ultimate adoption of constitutional language is made. I think Representative Homer has done a good job of outlining the work of the subcommittee, but we still, in my view, have quite a lot of work to do.
Thanks, Judge. I think it's important to take a step back and look at what everybody or what people perceive on the committee are the problems with legislative process. And if there are problems, we can correct or give appropriate solutions. The first problem that we really saw when we looked at was, you make it easier in the legislative process to amend the Constitution. And as we know, the process right now requires a two-thirds majority, both half and both sides. And it seems to be an appropriate level, at least within our subcommittee, it seems to be an appropriate level. Certainly, if something is important as amendments to the Constitution, you don't want a simple majority. You want a simple majority because you're protecting not only the majority of the people, but you're also protecting that minority with the Constitution. So it seems an appropriate time to do that two-thirds majority. A second problem that we had, or that we knew, was accessibility. That a bill or a resolution, amendments to the Constitution that were introduced, wasn't getting any access, wasn't having any debate in public hearing. And this at least provided, this alternative that we came up with, at least provided opportunity for that hearing, which is important. People need to feel that their viewpoint is being heard, and there will be opportunity for the press. Certainly, through the 500 or 600 or 700 people that introduced each year, only a small fraction of those get kept. But the opportunity to debate is important, very important cornerstone of our legislative process. The third thing, which I believe Judge Stewart amplified, was the scouting technical, verbal, or written sounding, structural sounding of the definition is very important.
We have very few constitutional amendments, but the two that we have, we do have some problems in relation to how they're actually being implemented in the country because of lasting and jockeying and verbal change. And so that committee also was to charge with the responsibility of making the resolutions of those proposals structurally fair, comprehensive, and workable, however you want.
Standalone committee and all constitutional amendment resolutions would be submitted to this committee, there would be no restriction on holding any, no, the chairman of that committee could not hold discussion on the amendment. Every resolution presented to that committee would be heard.
Right, there would be a requirement that they all be heard.
All right.
Not a requirement that they all be heard.
No, but that they all be heard. At that point in time, do you envision that the legality, after it was presented to the committee, and it was heard for the first year of hearing, would that be the time that the legality of it be dealt with or be explored?
Well, yes, probably both times, actually. I mean, the first time, obviously, unconstitutional or clearly conflicts with federal and due process law or whatever, presumably it was going further. But then the second step after it had gone through the hearing process, before it actually went to the floor, by that time, there may be changes that need to be made again. So it's kind of a two-tier process.
Okay, and then this would be a joint committee of the Senate. And I think that's a very good idea, as I would say, a lot of times. But we have something that goes through the entire process, proven constitutionally sound. It can go through, it passes out of the joint committee, goes to the floor, and gets changed. You envision that it comes back to the special committee for a final review before coming back to the floor?
We didn't talk a lot about that. I guess, presuming it's just a House resolution and it was passed first, and before it went to the floor of the Senate, it would be reviewed by the special committee. But I would see it going back yet again after it passed the Senate before it went to the House for concurrence. We did not get to that level of discussion. I think that might make it too complicated.
But in case of an amendment that might require that is related to the idea that they do background research or anything on it, when the amendment was placed on the floor. And definitely we can work out until the time. That's not a problem.
Yeah, obviously that would be the devil. What is the stuff I have is that I think they gave an honor to the respect and protect minority rights, if that's not, they will not control the majority.
wishes of other states to find out that they vote against them. When we talk about constitutionally sound, I think that we need to broaden that concept out. We mean constitutionally sound as far as the basic principles of the people, or constitutionally sound as far as our constitution today, where we forbid people in many, many ways to participate in government by the elastic constitution as it is today. And we should not use that as the criteria or what the criteria sound. So this is a thing that certainly it's a good attempt. We do need to do something to purple and people, so people haven't had to. I hope that something can, maybe I won't be around 20 years, 30 years from now, when they do have an opportunity to address something they can concern over 10 or 35 years.
Thank you, Gary. And when I asked the question about constitutionally sound, that is trying to refer to due process. Mainly, I was thinking, making sure that it wasn't in conflict with the federal constitution, because the whole idea of bringing a constitutional revision is to make a change to the constitution. So I wasn't looking at that, but making sure that we weren't in violation of the federal constitution.
There are many states that have been upheld.
Yeah, I'm really just sure that I'd like to see a little tightening up on the wording, especially on the drafting of the, you know, what we definitely want to apply as far as style and the drafting provision. So we need to work on that a little bit more. Maybe just fine-tune a couple more things in the resolution. We can get together later on that. But this
one, sure, one is going to like add, you might want to other members
to right.
Particularly those who have served as judiciary chairs, just who are interested in process questions, because
we
may also pick up some ideas.
Sure, that's a good idea. But also, what I see this as being, and Terry, this would address, one of your greatest concerns is that there would be no restriction to the public then in getting their opinion to the legislature and their ideas to the legislature.
Representative Phillips, perhaps I should interrupt to say that the Lieutenant Governor is with us, and that I think we should defer to him.
Just a moment, we will. And in this process, we will, this gives the, you know, gives the most assets that we would be providing right now to the public if we would go this way. So I'm pleased to see the report from the subcommittee. Sure, okay. We will come back to the subcommittee report after we hear from our erstwhile Lieutenant Governor Jack, I'm glad that you're back with us now, and I gave you a wonderful introduction a while ago.
Well,
I won't repeat it all other than to say that you are one of the great historians in Alaska as far as the Constitution, your involvement with the Constitutional Convention, your involvement in the legislature and statewide since that time. We're very pleased to have you today here to address our committee.
Well, thank you very much, Representative Phillips, for inviting me, and to all of you that are sitting on this task force. I think that you have a rather interesting approach to take to it. I'm sorry that my duties didn't allow me to come down and listen to the full proceedings, because I would have been very interested in hearing what Mr. Brown had, I believe you had somebody from California on earlier, and also missing Judge Stewart's comments, which I probably in part would have agreed with and in part maybe would have disagreed with, and that's where Tom and I have probably come for a good number of years in the constitutional structure, and I really respect his position. Madam President, the thing is that what we need to do in the revision, and I was interested in listening to your comments on the legislature and trying to mold what the legislature could or should not do when it comes to constitutional amendments. It seems to me that most of that lies within your rulemaking power, your joint rulemaking power, rather than in a constitutional revision. And my remarks today that we will give you some sort of a written proposal on it a little later on. My concern is that the concern of Representative or the delegate Robertson, when he had a real problem with the process of not being able to allow the general public to have access to the document through the referendum process. And I think that we have to take a good hard look at the first article of our Constitution, which gives the right of the people to petition their government in any matter. And I have always taken a strong position that what we need to do is to devise a third method of amending our Constitution, and that is by referendum or by initiative of the people. But before the initiative can go forward in the process, the initiators or the people that would be making the approach would go before a constitutional revision commission, a commission made up of the president of the Senate, the Speaker of the House, the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, and two people appointed by those three people to sit on this commission on every 2 year period, that they would be the style of drafting without losing the thrust of the general public as far as what they have in mind in order to be able to project their position forward. In other words, so that you don't get a runaway process that you have in California. And, you know, in all of the due respect to the legislators, and I was a legislator for 16 years, lots of times your meaning is well, but the only thing you recognize when a bill gets through the process is the number. And you find yourself in a position where that a lot of things get added, not only on the floor. It was very interesting listening to your discussion just now, because you have a constitutional process there, and I think that each one of the 60 legislators hold that very dear, and they should, because they are the representative, you might say, of the sovereign. They are the person that has been elected to represent the people in their stead in a representative form of government. So it's going to be real tough for you to be able to make rules that are going to impair their ability to be able to make policy. Now, I think that we should bring before this task force a proposition where that we add one more section to Article Number 13, Amendment and Revisions, where that revise the Constitution by one more section, giving the power of the people to be able to initiate by petition an amendment to the Constitution, that it be brought before a Constitutional Revision Commission. And that the Constitutional Revision Commission will make the style and the drafting of it to make sure that it's in proper form and that it go forward without impairing the wishes of the people. I think that will then give some real meaning to your task, and I would be more than happy to help or in any way that I can.
After the public proposed an initiative change or resolution, it would come to the Constitutional Revision Commission. You see that Constitutional Revision Commission doing anything other than approving the style of drafting? Do you see them acting as a clearinghouse? Do you see them acting as a qualifier or anything? Or are you just looking at them being considering it for the purposes of making sure it's clear and it's ballot worthy, et cetera?
Clear that would be my approach, would be that it would be in its proper style, it would be in proper form, it would be in a position where that it wouldn't be contrary to any other section of the Constitution, that sort of a thing, yes.
Okay, any other questions, Lieutenant Governor Tondo? Mr. Jacobus?
Lieutenant Governor, I've got a couple of questions about the proposed composition that you suggest for the Constitutional Revision Commission. The two members that were to be on the commission for a two-year term, how would they be appointed?
They would be appointed, all three of the commission would be a two-year term based because your presiding officers of your legislature change. And I would propose that the Chief Justice, the Supreme Court, and the President of the Senate, Speaker of the House, the three of them would appoint the other two members, and that those members then would be confirmed by the legislature.
Would there be any limitations on these two members?
Yes,
they legislators or the members of the public, or would the commission be free to choose two additional legislators to fill the commission?
No, the three of them would appoint the other two members, their authority being only vested for the 2 years. The commission would be a new commission sitting every 2 years.
No, these other two members, the three would appoint anybody they wanted to.
Yes.
Okay, now, do you have any problem with the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court being on the commission? Because if you get the Chief Justice involved in the process at the beginning, how would the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court be able to review and rule on constitutional challenges which might be made later on in the process after it's elected?
I would defer that to my good friend Judge Stewart, because I don't know whether there's a canon that in the Supreme Court, whether they get a Supreme Court justice serves on other institutions.
I think it's a hopeless conflict. I don't think the Chief Justice can possibly make initial review of constitutionality issues and then be expected to sit on a case that raises the issue before the court.
Then make it the Attorney General.
That was my view also. I just wanted to find out if you saw how we could get around that.
I just wanted the review commission to have a high standard.
Yeah, I understand that. I don't think that the present conflict of interest problem, I don't think the Chief Justice or any member of the judiciary actually should be on the review commission. And I think that the review commission does need public members.
Well, I just wanted to have it to have high standard, and I wanted it to be in a position where that it was it would be strictly to set the style and the drafting of it, and so that they would be, my envision, that they would be meeting with the movers of a petition to make sure that everything was in order for it to go forward.
Okay, thank you, Lieutenant Governor Cogdill. I appreciate the answers.
Representative Martin?
One of the things that's brought up, I'm very pleased with the Lieutenant Governor's concept that he does believe we need to have the Constitution open for people to have a voice, and I'm very pleased with that. But while he was speaking, it dawned on me that as we talked about the process and who would be on it, the reviews and this and that and so on, and Madam Chairman, I'm really concerned now that is this effort going to be a vehicle that perhaps this year here prevents any hearing for any bills that are now in the offer that are of a constitutional nature? And are we going to go back to the legislators and say now that we have this task force, here's the recommendation, therefore it's no use in having any hearings or pass any current legislation pertaining to the Constitution? I see this method here developing now as at least a four-year, if not a six-year process before even one. And it may be presented to the people on a ballot. And I hope this doesn't prohibit what we have now. There is some chance, maybe this session, that one or two questions may get on a ballot for the November
Well,
Representative Martin, that is not something that you, I don't think you have to worry about. We aren't scheduled to make our recommendations to the legislature until April. We have quite a bit of work left to do. I don't see it affecting this year's legislative session at all.
Representative Martin, I don't see that inhibiting anything, because if the will of the legislature to go forward with one or two of the proposals, they have that constitutional right to do that right now.
Judge Stewart, do you have any questions of the Lieutenant Governor?
No.
Any other questions from here? Jack, thank you very much for being with us and sharing your comments and considerations. And we certainly will take them into consideration.
Thank you very much for the privilege of being able to come before you.
Okay, and I hope we can call on you at any time.
Anytime. My door's open.
Thank you very much.
Representative Jones, this is Judge Stewart. I have a kind of procedure.
Go ahead.
I wondered if we could take about a 5-minute break, and then I wondered if it would be possible to consider the lunch break to take place about 10 minutes at 12 and until 1:15 or 1:30.
Okay, I think the way we're going, we're probably going to be able to wrap this whole thing up by either. Let's take a 5-minute break only, and then we'll come up. And I think that we should go, we don't have that many people scheduled to testify. We will probably be able to wrap it up right before noon. Thanks. Everybody got 5 minutes.
Hey, Joe, can I grab a coffee?
We do not have very many people satisfied. We have several people satisfied, don't have very many. And I think we probably, if we just proceed, we can get through by about 12, or 4 to 12. Judge Stewart, I understand that you need to leave about then. What I would like to do before we go into comments from the public is just briefly touch on the timeline and subjects for the future task force meeting. It's my intention that we will have one meeting in November, and then we will not have a December meeting. Again, December is just getting way too crowded and too many things going on. So that is acceptable to the committee. We will have a meeting in November. I'm not sure yet what date. I will let everybody know. We'll call everybody, make sure everybody can meet in November, because already November is getting very, very crowded also. And it will probably be towards the end of the month. Judy, I'd like you to look at the schedule, say somewhere between the 15th before Thanksgiving. Okay, and as for subjects for the future task force meeting, we'll have our other subcommittee. We'll have a report for that meeting. We will try to get some other material from the California Task Force, and we'll start doing some, putting some different options on the table to start discussing various methods and options. Anybody else have any ideas what needs to be on the agenda? Just let me know. Give me a call or let me know ahead of time. In Anchorage right now, we have Karen Dempster, and I'm going to call on her to testify. Members of the committee, I am Karen Dempster. I was the past executive director for Alaskans for Constitutional Reform. Our objective was to encourage a yes vote for call for the Constitutional Convention. In the process of preparing documents and reviewing the Constitution, I felt strongly Constitution. However, one thing appeared over and over again as we worked through the process, and that was that if we had the right to an initiative, if we could amend our Constitution by initiative, we would be able to handle the rest of the concerns in that forum and wouldn't have to wait every 10 years to address the issue. Because this is a process, the right of initiative would be a process for amending the Constitution or for dealing with a constitutional issue. I would like to strongly put that forward as a recommendation of this committee. Another overall framework consideration that we're so close to Russia, and we are in a state
House lost in this process any time. And if we don't have a constitution which balances that ability of the individual to still have some ownership and control of the government, we are in a worse situation than perhaps our neighbors who recently resolved their own problems in that area of expression. I feel that as a free people, we need the ability to address our government. We need to be able to feel that we have some control over our destiny and issues. And I think this one small thing will at least give us that opportunity to address our concerns within our constitutional framework. Thank you.
Karen, I have a question, if you don't mind answering a couple of questions. Did you, in looking at different ways of doing things, did you focus, look at any other methods other than the initiative, or did you focus on anything else other than the initiative?
Well, we were focusing at the time on the call for the Constitutional Convention. I feel that there's quite a few areas that are adverse to the individuals that need to be addressed in the Constitution. However, because your committee is now looking at process, and because that also came up very loud and clear from different ideas on what needed to be changed, that if we at least had the ability to amend by initiative, that would go a long, long way to solving our concerns. So those were the only two options other than status quo, which we felt was necessary.
Your organization is no longer in existence, is this
correct? We just addressed the issue of the yes vote.
Did you vote?
Yes, Senator, I have a couple of questions. There are two hypothetical scenarios which I'm going to present to you. The first one is that a group circulates an initiative. They have their own attorney. They put their wording together. They get sufficient signatures. Their initiative goes directly on the ballot. Lieutenant Governor Coghill suggested that an initiative should be prepared and it should be routed through a constitutional commission in order to be passed on for the purposes of style, clarity, consistency, that type of thing. Would passing an initiative through a constitutional revision commission satisfy the concerns of your previous organization and the people in it, or would that be viewed as just a stumbling block and white block public access?
Yes, I feel it's more of the same problem we're trying to remedy, which is greater direct access to the process. Our Constitution is our framework, and it's very, very significant in terms of everything else that happens with legislation and civil laws and independent rights, criminal rights, civil rights. If any time if we go for a recall vote or anything else, those petitions must be certified, they must be reviewed, they must be checked for clarity, language, etc. And I think that process is already in place. And I think to create a committee to do that again would be to create an additional stumbling block. So I would not recommend that. Now that doesn't mean that there aren't other avenues out there.
We have a sort of a benefit in Alaska in that we know each other pretty well, a lot of us. And I know you and I've worked with you in the past and I'll be talking to you in the future. And I just want to say I'm going to hit you up in the future. And I'd like to ask you now to think about some of these other avenues that and the constitutional revision task force idea to see if what suggestions and comments you might have on it later, to see if it would be acceptable, or if it's no, under no circumstances, would it be viewed as being acceptable and would it be viewed as being acceptable?
Right. In the theoretical, I would be opposed. In the actual, when you look at how it's framed and put together, that would be another thing. One thing, looking over the minutes from last time, that I would be very interested to see, and that is state-by-state breakdown of how they amend their constitution, and then look at the specifics affecting those states. Right? What is their industry? What is their what are the things, the overriding factors that are affecting those states? And then we maybe can look into that.
yacht that we also look at, and what other influences are helping them in terms of being able to raise revenue, whether industry is or not.
Just a real brief question. I don't think you were in the room this morning when Speaker Brown from California made people for you. You don't have a voting. It was really interesting. He had no uncertain terms made clear that
again, then you shape them down. company. You know, I love many people looking at things. They always see something else or see something different. And I think some forward through that process with the method that will hopefully identify areas of concern. I think perhaps in this process we may even make recommendations to the legislature for other areas that we need to look at in terms of election reform. When there are problems out there, there may be problems, and I think they need to be addressed. And if we can do that, I think there's one committee that will do a lot of areas of this intent and make recommendations as well. Judge Stewart, do you have a question? Any questions of Karen?
No, thank you. Appreciate hearing from Lynn.
Okay, and I would hope, Karen, that as we proceed, we would very much like to have your comments as we go along.
Thank you.
Thank God. What you're doing? Yes. Thanks. And there was a definite need for this kind of committee work to be done. Thanks. All right, next we'll go to Fairbanks, Brian Rogers.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Brian Rogers, I speak to you today on behalf of myself and not on behalf of my employer. I served as chairman of the Constitutional Convention Committee in of the legislature in the late 70s and helped organize a conference on the Constitution in 1991. And I really appreciate the work of this committee and your attention to might be in other areas and cleanup that would be necessary. Again, Madam Chair, I'd like to thank you for getting this command together, and I was glad to answer any questions that members may have.
Thank you, Mr. Rogers, and I know that Fran appreciates your comments. I will also have other questions from the committee. Mr. Stewart, do you have any questions?
Not at this point.
Brian, this is Ellen Mulder. I really appreciate your comments and couldn't agree more about the fact that if you basically allow or open the Constitution to the highest bidder, you're going to have problems. I mean, it's just your point about the telecommunications was exactly true. What you saw today was a base level of two companies trying to buy legislation. And I was directly involved with it and realize and understand the fact that if you've got enough money, you're willing to put up enough money, you can buy a vote. And it's very, very difficult to battle that when you really don't have an organized opposition group. And it strikes me that the statutes are the proper avenue of modification by initiative. We've got to be very, very cautious about amending our Constitution, which protects not just the majority, but that minority that does not have a lot of money, that does not have the same resources and access to oppose an initiative or an effort. And so I think it's very important to consider those facts and to weigh that advice carefully. Thank you.
I couldn't agree with you more.
Brad, apparently nobody else has questions, but I want to say I appreciate your comments. And we are very, very fortunate in this committee to have a great deal of expertise to draw upon. And I hope as we go further into the process that we may be able to call on you.
Absolutely. Anytime.
Thank you very much. All right, we go next to the Memphis Valley and Leonard Moffitt.
I'm Leonard Moffitt for the record. And I'm really surprised about this deal that it has been publicized more so that more people know about it. Here I'm the only one in the whole Matanuska Valley that seems to have heard about this or is interested in it or something. But as I listen to this, what little I've listened to already, it seems like the people are afraid of themselves, or the people that are talking are afraid of the people. And we sure need the people willing to be able to come up with initiatives and referendums and work on this money situation later. Right now, how much is a vote worth? Somebody donates $1,000 to a legislator, does that mean that guy gets, say, $25 is equal to one vote? Does that guy get that many more votes with the legislator? Or anyhow, we sure need to get the people to where they can change this Constitution. What was it, 25% of the delegates were attorneys, and 75-90% of them on the judicial committee that set up the judicial system were attorneys, so it's really not very much in favor of the people. We need to get a constitution that's fit for the people. And so hopefully you can come up with an initiative and a referendum for us. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Moffitt. Are any questions from the committee of Mr. Moffitt? And Mr. Moffitt, I just want to brief you on the process. Right now we're just still in the process of doing research and gathering information on our committee. We will be continuing our work through the session. Our meetings are all public and are advertised as such. And we certainly, as we get
try to get spots out about these meetings all the time, so they are public. And as far as your point on dollar contributions buying votes, I want to say unequivocally, absolutely not. That is not the case with the legislature. Right now, we'll go back to Juno. Is there anybody in Juno that would like to testify?
No, there isn't.
Anybody in Juno?
There's no one here, Representative.
Okay. Go to Fairbanks. Is there anybody else in Fairbanks who'd like to testify?
From the
no.
public.
And I noticed we did earlier have a couple of you online. Is there anybody talking to you that would like to testify?
Thanks for checking. We're just listening in.
Okay, thanks. We don't have anybody here, so we called her pretty quickly. And we will adjourn in just a moment, but I will let everybody know when our next meeting will be, sometime mid to mid. Late November. Thanks
everybody for being here today. Thanks, Judge Stewart. Hi, Tyler. You were under your 10th call. Oh, that's right.
Go ahead.
Rather, a few questions that I had on your report for the legislative revision.
I think if I may respond to you, Ken Jacobus, what Mr. Brown said, it has come to the point in California where it's a cottage industry, and they They are professional at packaging the issue, and it's easy for them to do it once they have accomplished a professional expertise in doing that kind of thing. And if we consider the initiative, we're open to that problem coming here.
Yeah, that might be true. I think California is